Welcome to The Squeal, PIC's Swine Management Podcast, featuring in-depth conversations on topics that matter to you. PIC is the global leader in swine genetics. At PIC, our goal is to make our customers the most successful pig producers by providing them with the best genetics. We know our business success depends on yours. Today we share part two of a conversation about what should we expect from the evolution of genetics and nutrition. Our special guest is Dr. John Patience of Iowa State University, joined by Dr. Weasley Orlando, PIC's Global Nutrition Director, and Dr. William Herring, PIC's Director of Global Development.
John Patience, Professor of Applied Swine Nutrition at Iowa State University.
William Herring, responsible for the Global Genetic Improvement Program.
Weasley Orlando, I'm Global Nutrition Director.
The question on the table is, what new metric is of greatest value to you?
From my point of view, in terms of the important metrics, I'm finding that entry weight into wean to finish is very, very important because that correlates with how we should be feeding that pig. If we're bringing in an 11-pound pig versus a 12-pound pig versus a 13-pound pig, we have to start those pigs a little bit differently. And so that helps us to understand the circumstances we're dealing with, the pig that we're dealing with, and it will affect the feeding program. The other metric that's really important to us, and it's not so much a new metric, but it's a very important metric, and that's market weights. And market weights have changed. Market weights have fluctuated. And as nutritionists, we've had to make adjustments. I don't remember the exact numbers, but it's something like 2/3 of the feed consumed by a pig is after 200 pounds. If we're feeding that pig up to 285, which would be an average, or if we're going up to 300, or you'll recall a few years ago when PED was a serious problem going through our herds, we were getting up to 320. And we have to understand that so that we spend the amount of money on feed that is required, but not excessive, because we can really impact the profitability of wean to finish by how we feed that final pig. If we underfeed that pig, we're going to lose growth rate, and that's going to cost money. We just can't underestimate the value of even an extra pound in a given grow-out period spread out over, you know, even a single barn, let alone dozens of barns. But on the other hand, if we overspend, then we can take some of that potential added profit and lose it because we've wasted it on a diet that supplies nutrients to that pig that it really doesn't need. So that's also a very, very important metric. Carrying on, I think we look at mortality, and especially when mortality occurs, that helps us to understand the success of our feeding program. It's one thing to look at closeout data and look at mortality. You know, the mortality was 6% or 10% or whatever it was, but it's a whole different thing if we look at when that mortality occurred, because that's more instructive to us. It also tells us a little bit on how much that mortality is costing us, because if that pig dies at 250 pounds, 275 pounds, we've invested a lot of money in that pig, and we're getting nothing for it. And no mortality is good, but if that pig dies at 20 pounds, well, at least we haven't invested $60 in feed into that pig and then have it die. But it also helps us to diagnose a little bit of our feeding program, what role feeding program might have in mortality, if we can look at where that mortality occurred.
Based on Dr. Patience's comments related to the growing pig, tell me about that genetically. How's today's growing pig different from what we were dealing with 5 years ago, 8 years ago, 10 years ago?
You know, again, kind of going back to still some of the earlier comments on the genetic side, changes that are in the pipeline, you know, the growth potential is clearly much different from a genetics perspective. You know, John's comments around wean to finish mortality or livability, you know, I agree 100% with those. From the genetics perspective, you know, one thing I'd add in is that typically as we look at, you know, genetic improvement in pigs, you know, historically most of that's been done in kind of high health settings, nucleus farms. We measure a lot of extra things in nucleus farms, like we were talking about with birth weight. But when we start thinking about, does that performance always translate to the typical commercial pig in, you know, pig dense areas? That's not always a one-to-one correlation. One of the things that we've done to try and address that really over the last 15 to 20 years here within PIC is actually get meaningful, what I'd call meaningful genetic data out of commercial operations that drive how we select the pigs. So yet we're still collecting those same great data within high health nucleus farms from where we have to disseminate germplasm to customers, but we're also capturing data in, you know, the middle of pig dense Iowa and Minnesota and other places, and what I'd call pedigreed commercial pigs, where we actually take our GGP elite sires and the first doses of semen they produce doesn't go into a nucleus female. It actually goes into a camber, a sow, and a PERS positive, PED exposed, etc. Very typical.
More real life.
Exactly. Real life, real world situation. And we have partners that participate with us on this, and they identify those piglets at birth. We track them all the way through to harvest. So if a mortality occurs, we capture that when it occurred. We know if it's early on in finishing, later on. Then we capture the composition data. To John's point that he mentioned about going to heavier weights, we have plants where we capture those data. Those pigs are going in 300 plus pounds. So, you know, that in itself, we're tracking growth rate and body composition as it relates to feed conversion. So those are actually very structured data that drive the genetic improvement for the PIC products that get utilized. So that's been a big deal for us. And what ultimately that does from customers who use those products, those terminal products specifically, is that they can have the confidence that we've tested those lines and specific boars within those lines ahead of time in those conventional health type of scenarios that more than likely most of our customers are exposed to. So that's been a key thing for us as part of the genetic improvement program, to try and keep it, you know, real life, if you will.
And Weasley, I know you talk with customers, so again, nutritionally, you've got the perfect scenario on your spreadsheet, but in real life, it reflects it.
Yeah, you know, there is several components on this. I mean, it's easy to predict in my an hour twos, right? The requirement or provide a best recommendation, but there's a lot of components that involve on this. I mean, management, feeders, and everything. But as our deal today, I mean, it's trying to provide the maximum as possible closed information close to the real world. I mean, the trials that, for example, we have been doing, it's all in commercial research facility that can actually probably replicate the same challenge that they have on a normal operation. That what became our recommendation today strong than probably just trials with some animals per pen or high health condition. So, and PAC does not, I mean, different than probably think nutritionists think that, for example, we copy and paste information for our nucleus farm to the field. No, definitely PAC does not do this. What we do is running trial using our normal animals, real world facilities, and then building the requirement. We know that nucleus farms is a different world, right? Really different animals. It's animals that you can come to the field probably in maybe represent the average population in 5 years.
Mm-hmm. So a pig's a pig's a pig, but it's not. We've got weaned to finish pigs. Mm-hmm. We've got gilts and sows. And from the gilts and sows come the weaned to finish pigs. But genetically and nutritionally, we have to treat them different. How so?
So let's talk about this in terms of The biggest concern today, my biggest concern as a nutritionist in PIC is how we should feed a future mother. Because you know that Cumbro is still calling Cumbro 10 years ago and probably today, it's the same and maybe in 10 years. But we know that this cell, as William mentioned before, is growing really fast today. We are investing today to understand and learning about aging, that they became the best reproduction in the herd, right? So we also trying to understand about the best weight and the best, best time to inseminate. The things that we are aware today, the information that we have support in is future mother, a replacement gilt is not the same that feed a commercial animal, commercial gilt. We need to think about this gilt in the herd for probably at least 5 parrots. So if you feed it the same as a commercial, let's say commercial animal, commercial gilt, we're going to probably missing some important nutrients on that.
Any changes coming, though, in the near term? You and I have talked about this.
Yeah, good point, William.
Because gilt development's an opportunity area.
Yeah, it is. I don't know. Probably John is going to agree with me, but with us, gilt development is a black spot today. It's a really point that, it's hard to find places to run in this kind of trial with replacement gilts. The only thing that we know today is those gilts are growing really faster than 5 years ago. It's really weird. I use this kind of comparison like, it's kind of trying to break in a Ferrari. We are trying to do by nutrition, but it's crazy because they eat and they grow. Even if we, like nutritionists, we can do a low density and a low density diet, but we cannot slow down to achieve this.
Because if we drive that with, our general recommendation would be if she's reached 300 pounds,
yes,
you've got an HNS,
that's right,
30 weeks is a reasonable target to
That's right. So, yeah, that's the point. But we are aware today that we are struggling on this. We are investing our time, dedicating in some cooperation with universities to understand more about these targets, 300 pounds, 30 weeks, and if it's still valid or not. Because based on what William's team is doing, is really hard or much harder today to do than 5 years ago.
Dr. Patience, you had a thought or a comment.
Yeah. First, Ed, I'd like to go back to previous conversation, and you were asking about what data would we look at and what data would we love to have. And the one number that we find difficult to get under commercial conditions is feed intake curves. Because if we know how much feed a pig is eating when it's 50 pounds or 100 pounds or 200 pounds, then we can understand what their nutrient requirements are, and we can develop a feeding program that fits that particular animal in that particular circumstance. I think William made a really, really good point. The geneticists have to look at how their pig performs, not only in the nucleus, but also under commercial conditions. And of course, those commercial conditions are hugely diverse, but feeding programs have to do the same thing. One of the biggest variables, as I said earlier in our conversation, one of the variables is health, and the other variable is feed intake. And the more information we get feed intake on closeout data, but we don't get actual feed intake curves as frequently as I would like to see, because it is really, really valuable information. And to me, it's a very important KPI. A lot of people look at feed conversion. I chuckle a little bit because so many people say that feed conversion is a bad KPI because it's really hard to compare from farm to farm to farm on feed efficiency because there's so many variables. And so if I want to see how my farm is performing compared to another farm, well, feed efficiency is really important because it drives cost, but it's not a particularly good measure because it's influenced by a lot of things that are independent of genetics or nutrition. For example, I might be feeding a diet that's 1450 and somebody else is feeding a diet that's 1400. How do I compare my herd to their herd. Somebody's feeding pelleted diets, and I'm not feeding pelleted diets. Somebody's adding 2% fat, somebody else is adding 4, and I'm not adding any. So feed efficiency is, it's an important number, but it's not a great KPI. But feed intake drives so much. If pigs are eating well, they're growing well. And that applies to the sow just as much as it does to the growing pig. You often hear people say that feed intake is king, and it really is. It's very, very, very important. Coming back now to, you know, a pig is a pig is a pig, there are so many variables that we have to take into account, and the GDU is a very, very important area. If we want to get longevity in our sow herd, if we want to maximize PSY, we have to start with good gilts. And I agree with usually the modern pig is hard to feed the way we would like her to eat because she's programmed to eat a lot and she's programmed to grow quickly. And that's not necessarily what we want to see in the GDU. So there are ways of defining that, and I think we're going to see new ways going down the road. But the problem is, I don't know if you'd agree usually, but one of the problems is the things that we would do or might do in order to slow her growth down just a little bit to, say, enhance skeletal development and even just her reproductive development may have adverse effects on her later on. So we have to be very, very careful what we do in order to achieve the outcome that we want to achieve.
Joining us on The Squeal today were special guest Dr. John Patience of Iowa State University with Dr. William Herring, PIC's Director of Global Development, and Dr. Weasley Orlando, PIC's Global Nutrition Director. Part 3 yet to come. You're welcome to share these programs widely in your organization. In fact, we encourage it. For PIC, the international leader of continuous genetic improvement in swine breeding stock and in world-class technical support to the global pork supply chain, I'm Ned Arthur. Thanks for joining us.